This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
Hey, Nick, happy birthday.
Thanks. Wait, what? It's not my birthday today.
Oh, well, then happy 25th of February.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. Yeah, you missed it by a few months, so
no worries. I always forget your birthday.
Okay, so you just guessed it was the 25th
of February? Yeah, I just thought maybe, you know, today was your birthday.
Okay.
It just felt like a birthday.
Yeah. Got you, yeah. Well, thanks, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't actually forget your birthday. I remembered your birthday last year. Were you sick on your birthday?
I think I might have been. I don't know. Yeah, I think I might have been.
Is this that's not when you had COVID?
No, I had it in January of last year. Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, maybe I just think your birthday's in January and February. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know where this is coming from. All right. Well, we are here on a Friday night. Not even evening. Friday night. It is late. Not late. I mean, it's
kind of late.
It's 8:41, for those of you who are wondering. So it's not our typical podcast time, but here we are.
Yep.
And we decided we're going to do this a couple hours ago. So we're going to jump into it, and we're going to do something interesting tonight. We're going to do a hodgepodge of topics based off listener questions and topic suggestions that we've had over the years, more so over the months, recent months. So we've got a handful of topics that you, our lovely listeners, have sent in primarily through our survey that we have that you can take in the show notes, by the way. If you want to add your own suggestions, we'll answer them next time. But we've got a list. I'm excited for this one.
Should be good. Yeah, we've got a little lightning round here. We actually ended up with some topics that we have a bit to say on, believe it or not.
Yeah, so. I think so. And some touch on topics that we've maybe been meaning to talk about at some point. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Should be fun. Should we just dive in?
Let's just dive in. Let's just bounce on this diving board and dive in.
Sounds good. It's my birthday after all.
That's right. Might as well do some diving. All right. So our first one, Nicholas, is a listener suggestion that we talk about, The Death of Ivan Ilyich by Leo Tolstoy. You know, I'm really excited for this one because, you know, it's something we've definitely both not read.
We've definitely never read this little novella by Tolstoy.
Is it a novella?
It is.
Oh,
yeah,
so we could read. We could totally read it.
Yeah, we probably could
do an episode on it.
That would be good. Maybe we'll mention it next time. I don't know. I don't want to commit to that, but maybe.
Yes. So I'm sorry, dear listener, but we cannot address this one at the moment. But we do love our Russian novelists, and so we hope to address it in the future. So we'll put that on our homework. We'll read this lovely novella, as you called it, and get back to you.
Sounds good. Yeah, I will say I have read some of Tolstoy, and
literally,
I love what I've read.
You were just like spark noting it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was just looking it up on Wikipedia a few minutes ago, yeah, just to get a sense of what it was about. But I feel uncomfortable saying what I know about it in public. So,
dude, that's totally like the kid who just like finds out that they're talking about a book in class, and so he spark notes
it's a classic
it,
yeah
right before
that's a classic
wow classic Nick move right there.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna go a little deeper with this next one, actually very deep, I think, because what's deeper than suffering?
Fair enough. Oh, you're gonna give me the first go at it, huh?
No, I just asked you a question. What's deeper than suffering?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure how to answer that.
No, just kidding. That was rhetorical.
Oh.
No, but this question, I'll probably let you start. I'll read it and I'll let you start with your initial thoughts on
okay.
it. So it's how to grow from crosses/struggles that feel fruitless.
Well, let me ask you first. Is that how the topic was worded?
I literally copied and pasted.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Yeah. How to grow from crosses, struggles that feel fruitless. Yeah. I think this is a general rule of the spiritual life. It seems like feeling is, I don't want to say never a good indication, but one should never rely on feelings to be the end-all be-all of this is bearing fruit or not.
Sure.
Yeah, so I think that would be a general rule of thumb in the spiritual life. Like, let's not let feeling this or feeling that be the end-all be-all of whether or not it's fruitful.
All right, so got it, listener? Don't worry about your feelings.
Just, we don't care about them, no. I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, you're totally right, though.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I think that's that's at the heart of this, is that yes, things feel, some crosses, some struggles feel fruitless, but that doesn't mean that they are.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be glued to the feeling.
Right? Yeah.
Because I think as we grow in the spiritual life, often the feeling is taken away from time to time. And I don't know, but at the same time, I have a lot of respect for this question because, I mean, it's a tough, tough question. Yeah. You know, in my own experiences, right, there's sufferings that I might go through that it's like, oh yeah, like, man, this is great. I get to suffer, get to be, you know, disciplined in this way, offer it up, and just grow in virtue through this. And then there's those struggles, there's those crosses. It's just like, I don't feel like I'm growing through this. I just feel like this is unnecessary suffering. And that's what I think our listener is getting at here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think where in my life where I sympathize with this a ton is like the idea of never like seemingly not growing in the spiritual life. I know there's the word struggles feel fruitless in this question. Mm-hmm. And I know in my life, I've definitely felt that of like I'm struggling with a particular fault or a particular sin. And I feel like I'm coming to confession every time I go and confessing the same thing. And I just get the sense that I'm not growing. It's not bearing fruit. You know, my spiritual life isn't bearing fruit. So I totally get that struggle. And that's a hard one. Do you have thoughts? I have a few.
Well, you're kind of reading a book about it. I want to hear what this book has to do with it.
Yeah, so I'm actually reading a book right now called How to Profit from Your Faults. I'm not going to be able to name the author. I always forget his name, but it's called How to Profit from Your Faults. He's drawing a lot right now on St. Francis de Sales and his teachings.
Is this a Catholic book?
Yes, it is. An Introduction to the Devout Life. He seems to be drawing a lot from his wisdom. But it's a broader topic, but kind of where I'm focused right now in the book is it's just talking a lot about whenever it is that we sin, we tend to be surprised. Like there's this thing that we do as sinners. We resolve to not do a thing. And then when we commit the fault or we sin, we're somehow surprised that we've done that. Even though we've been told that we're sinners and we need saving and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked myself, why am I surprised by that? Why am I surprised that I keep sinning? I shouldn't be. Like Jesus says, like we have... through original sin, formed concupiscence. We've gained this natural inclination towards sinning. So we shouldn't be surprised when we sin is one thing. The other thing too that I will say is his kind of summary is remain calm and undisturbed when you sin.
Mm-hmm.
Don't freak out. Don't move into despair or discouragement. That's the enemy. Just remain calm, maintain your peace whenever it is that you sin or whenever it is that you commit a fault, which I've found to be very helpful and actually fruitful, even if it seems as if I'm not growing.
Right. Joseph Tissot, is that the name of the author?
That's it.
I think I found
that's it. That's his name, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think you find that as a consistent theme in the writing of the saints, right, is don't lose your peace. We talked about this with Searching for and Maintaining Peace by Jacques Philippe as well. So yeah, I think that's a really good word there, Nick.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's interesting. I actually just last night was reading the book of Job, which I think has a lot to say about suffering. I think Job's suffering definitely seemed fruitless, the crosses and struggles that he went through. So I want to share just a little bit from the ending of the book of Job. And for those of our listeners, I guess, who aren't familiar, I think, with the book of Job, basically, you know, Satan comes to God and says, hey, this holy guy Job, I think he's just holy because, you know, you're blessing him. What if he took it away? Then he wouldn't be holy anymore. And God says, bet.
Essentially, yeah.
Basically, right? Yeah. And so God does. Like, he allows all these bad things to happen to Job and his family. And he loses all this wealth and everything. And most of the book, that's all at the beginning. And then most of the book is just Job and his friends just really lamenting the state. And his friends are kind of they're the example of how not to respond to suffering. And Job's not perfect, but I think he does maintain faith. He questions, but I think he maintains a better disposition than his friends through the midst of it. And what was striking me, I was reading the end of this book, and it's you know, this is where the famous line, when the Lord says to Job, "Where were you when I created the universe?" And this is essentially God's answer to Job's suffering, right? It's like, you're looking for answers, you're looking for questions, and the reality is, you know, it's really just that. The rhetorical question there is the answer. Where were you when I created the universe? And it just reminds us of our smallness, of the reality that, yeah, we don't understand. We're not going to fully understand all the answers, but we have a God who does. We have a God who's been there. And the striking thing about this for me as I was reading through it is just what he goes on to say. Is he goes on to just describe creation. You know, he says things like, "Behold the behemoth," which is, I have a footnote, a hippopotamus.
Actually. Oh, wow.
So basically God's like, hey, look at the hippopotamus. Yeah. Like, I made that, essentially. He said, which I made as I made you. He eats grass like an ox. Behold, the strength in his loins and the power in his muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stiff like cedar, and sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are like tubes of bronze, his limbs like bars of iron. Then he goes on to describe other things in creation in the same way, right? Like, can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook? Leviathan being a crocodile, right? Like, just referring to all these things he's created. He's like, can you make these things, Job? Can you? And that's it. And Job has no answer. Job's answer at the end is, I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Hear, and I will speak. I will question you and declare to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. Any thoughts, Nick?
No, I think it's really beautifully said. Yeah, I have nothing to add.
Yeah, no, I think that's appropriate response, right? Like, you know, how do you respond to that kind of an answer? But it makes me think of, you remember watching Tree of Life?
Yeah, I do.
The movie, yeah. So this movie is Terrence Malick that our friend Dan had us watch, and it talks about, well, the theme, like the quote at the beginning. Is it the beginning they have this quote from Job?
Yeah, it is, right at the beginning.
Yeah, they show this quote, "Where were you when I created the universe?" And then there's about 30 minutes or 40 minutes of just dinosaurs and astronomical phenomenon and like just weird stuff. And it's all silent, but it's just like the grandeur of creation. And then the rest of the movie is about this family and their suffering, right? Their immense suffering that they are going through in mourning. And so I think this really portrays that beautifully, that this line of, "Where were you when I created the universe?" as, in a sense, God's response to suffering. I don't know, is that consoling to you?
Yes, I think so. It seems very consoling that God is always in control, no exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in some ways this feels to me like a kind of depressing response to suffering. Like, right. That there, in some sense, there is no answer other than just that God is in control.
Yeah, well, I think just to flesh that out, I mean, God, you know, our sufferings and struggles don't have the final say. At the end of the day, we're always forward looking as Christians. We're mm-hmm. always, you know, moving towards, you know, our destiny of being forever in heaven with God, which has the final say. God always has the final say, you know, whatever sufferings or struggles we're going through. So I think that's the thrust of what's being said, you know, is mm-hmm. Where were you when I, so on and so forth, is the way of saying, I've got this, you know, yeah. Like you might yeah. not understand, and that's fine.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah. And I think maybe what I'd add to that in conclusion with this topic is kind of, we see bits and pieces, right? And I think we do need to hold on to those things. When we see bits and pieces of, you know, the meaning in our suffering, I think we do need to cling to those, right? And see, no, like there, I can see the reasons why the Lord is putting me through this, even if I don't see the full big picture, because those help.
Yeah.
So I think those, along with this understanding and this acceptance that, Job has, I think are helpful.
Right.
It's not going to take away the suffering, but maybe it'll help.
Yeah. I think too, I know I have in the past, but I think a lot of us, or you know, really all of us do, we assume that when we're suffering or when we're struggling, that we could understand the reason why that's happening or what the purpose of, you know, of this period of our lives are, you know, and like maybe it's way too much for our human mind and heart to be able to understand. God is infinite, mm-hmm. you know, so we're just a lower being. Why would we expect to be able to understand at a full level what's going on with our suffering and our yeah. struggles? You know, it's just maybe it's impossible for us to understand.
That's fair. That's fair. All right, you want to go on to the next one?
Sure.
Do you have more on that?
Nope, that's great. Okay.
Great. So the next one's being Catholic in the secular workforce. Well, considering I have spent, you know, the last, you know, really all of my working career, the vast majority of my working career in a non-secular workforce, you might be the one to speak more to this.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to caveat this with like six asterisks and say I'm by no means an expert in this area, yeah. but I have been in the secular workforce for, I guess, 4 years now, a little over 4 years. 1 year as a teacher in a public school, and then three and, you know, working for the federal government. And then as a, I guess, secular soccer coach too.
Mm-hmm. So you're a very secular soccer coach.
Yeah. So anyway, working in a secular soccer club and a secular private school yeah. as a coach.
I don't know
yeah.
if I would describe you as a secular okay, soccer coach.
That's not what I meant, but anyway. But yeah, I have a few thoughts, you know, one is, it's hard to navigate what to do. You know, because there is this mission of knowing Jesus and then two, making him known. There is this yeah. mission of, and that's really our purpose on earth, is to know Christ Jesus and to make him known. Two things. If you fail to do that, you've failed. That's really that, you know. And so that second part is really tough in the secular environment, I have to say. I have a few things that you know, I've kind of encountered in the workforce. One is just the way that you, and this is going to sound really cliche, mm-hmm. but just the way that you operate is very important, very important.
Yeah. The way you carry yourself.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It is very easy in the workforce. I would say the average person in the workforce, you know, just goes about their day, offers the general 8 hours a day, you know, is kind of average, kind of complains some, does a, you know, decent job. But that's really it. You know, this is kind of like an average, disposition there among the workforce. So there is an opportunity, I would say, to be joyful, mm-hmm. To just make sure that you're going to be joyful every day, day in and day out in the workforce, notably, emails that you write, calls that you make, whatever it is. So that's one thing I would say. Any thoughts on that?
I think that goes a long way. I think of, you know, 'cause I have worked secular jobs and some of this applies in non-secular jobs, right? Just in the workforce being a witness. And I think like little things can go a long way. Yeah. How you talk to others, how you treat others. For some reason, one of the things I was thinking of is like, how can you serve your coworkers? You know, like you're going up to get a drink of water. Can you get the person next to you a drink of water? You know, like little things like that, that you're not just going through your day without purpose. You're going through it with a greater sense of purpose and mission. I think that's one thing. The other thing that makes me think of is what I've talked before is like the, you know, like in my article I wrote about surfaces, right? How you can spot a Christian from a mile away if they're acting like a Christian, mm-hmm. right? But I've always felt like in the workforce, particularly in the secular environments I've been in, I've been able to tell when somebody was a Christian. Sometimes it's by the language they use or they don't use, and just by the way they carry themselves, right? So I think living out your faith in every moment, I think, is the starting point at the very least.
That's right. Yeah. It gets a little bit complicated when, you know, we're in Alabama. So it seems like I would say the majority of people, if not most people, are going to a Christian church of some kind. So it's a little bit different, I think, in that quote unquote secular workforce, because, you know, a lot of people in our area in Huntsville have heard the name of Jesus before.
Right.
And you're hearing about him on Sunday. And, but there is that, you know, Catholicism element too. Like, there's not a ton of Catholics here, even though we have a growing community and a good community, I think. So I think a bigger question is, you know, as a Catholic, how can I, as a Catholic Christian, how can I live that out?
Sure.
In a secular workforce, but one that has a lot of non-Catholic Christians. You know what I mean? So I think that's a question, too, that I think is related.
Is that hard for you?
I think it's a little bit hard to, I don't want to say distinguish oneself as a Catholic Christian. I think there's little things that that can be done that I try to do, like on my desk. I'll leave artwork on my desk. So I have a frame of Our Lady of Guadalupe on my desk and a crucifix on my desk. And I carry a rosary in my pocket, so, and I hold it sometimes. Yeah. So the things like that, you know, we have like little sacramentals, you know, or things that that can be visuals for people of, oh, that person's Catholic, you know, which has worked in the past. So things like that. That's one thing I would say. I would also say too, just as another thing, I know I need to do better about this, but just being open about when, not forcing it, but when it comes up, just being open about, oh, I'm going to Mass. I can't be at X. Oh, I'm, you know, going to the chapel, or whatever it is, you know, just being open with your communication whenever it comes up and not being afraid to say something like that.
I think sometimes it's like, we're like, oh, I have something. I have a conflict.
That's right.
And shy away from it when that could actually be an opportunity to talk about, oh no, I have, you know, I'm going to Mass, or I'm stopping by the Adoration Chapel, right? Those can be opportunities that I think sometimes we shy away from.
Yeah. It's, it also like, too, you don't have to have a 20-minute conversation about it every time you bring it up. You know, it could be as simple as, hey, I'm going to Mass. I can't be, you know, whatever. So one example is I go to Mass every Friday morning. Like, so I could say like, hey, like I'm coming in at 9 because I'm going to Mass. Something like that. Just something simple. Like, you don't have to have a conversation about it. Yeah. Just to spark the interest or whatever.
One thing I remember hearing too, and I've put this into practice at times in my life, but I can't remember the speaker who said this, but he was given a talk about kind of this topic of sharing the faith in the workplace. And one of the things he said is when somebody asks you how you are, he said his response is, I'm blessed. How are you? And this is something I've put into practice before, and I found it has a couple good results. One is it reminds me that I'm blessed, right? It reminds me of the blessings in my life. And two, a lot of times the response is, you know, I'm blessed too, right? Like people kind of think about that for themselves. And at the very least, it's like, huh, that's a different response, right? So I found that can be a way, just a subtle way to live out your faith, just even in the small talk. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really important to be intentional about the little things. Any little thing that you can do to kind of draw Jesus out in the secular environment, I think is so important. Yeah. I love the intentionality behind that. Yeah. I think we as Catholic Christians can just be a little bit more intentional about even little things that we do. So I think it's great. Yeah,
sure. All right, good stuff. Anything else on that one?
Nope.
All right, thank you, dear listener. I don't think any of these, some of these I have an idea who it is, but we don't have names tied to these. So thank you, dear listener.
Thanks, Mom. gotta throw one of those in there every episode. Yeah.
I don't think that was your mother.
Okay.
Okay. The next one is just human, it's titled Human Formation versus Spiritual Formation. Was this the one that was from the same listener, actually?
It was, okay. Yes.
Yeah, so this is from the same listener. So dear listener, who we just signed off on.
Thanks again, Mom.
Welcome back. Hope you're listening. Human Formation versus Spiritual Formation. So I think this person might be alluding to something that's talked a lot about in Focus, which is kind of the pillars or levels of formation. And these levels of formation actually come from, as far as I know, you know, they come from this letter that John Paul II wrote to priests, actually. Are you aware of this? This is where it came from?
No, okay. I'm not. But
cool. So John Paul II wrote a letter about basically like the health of priests. And he laid out these four levels of formation: human, spiritual, intellectual, and apostolic. And this is something we talked a lot about in Focus, or a decent amount at Focus training, about, you know, as missionaries, we need to be formed in these four ways. And we looked at it as a pyramid, where the bottom, like if you think of like the old food pyramid, where like bread's on the bottom and sweets are on the top, got right? It. See, like you start, the bottom's the most important.
Wait, I thought it was candy canes, candy corns, and syrup. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, I've never seen that one. Okay, I like that though.
It's from Elf. You're with me, right?
I've seen Elf.
Okay, yes. It's from the movie Elf. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Gotcha. Okay. But yeah, so it's these four levels, and it's, I guess it's not quite the food pyramid. It's not like you need nine servings of human and, you know, only sparingly apostolic formation. It's more so that they build on each other, right? So human's the base level, and human formation is things like basic discipline, things like mental health, building habits of virtue, getting up at the same time, being on time for things. Human formation, just like, not necessarily explicitly spiritual, but just basic virtue. Is that a fair way of describing it?
That's great. Yeah, I like the, well, I'm probably jumping the gun here, but it's kind of the nature element. You know, I think it was Thomas Aquinas that said grace builds upon nature or whatever. So it's kind of the, yeah, like building the natural foundation for the spiritual life.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. And so that's why it's at the bottom, right? Because you have to have that natural foundation to build on. And so the second level is then spiritual, which is, you know, habits of prayer, right? Is actually incorporating the Lord into that. And so this is, you know, where, what you might think of, you know, these might be the obvious things, right, that you work on formation-wise, you know, praying, going to Mass, learning different ways of praying, going on retreats. These kinds of things would be spiritual formation, right? And then you have intellectual, which is the third level, which is actually forming yourself in knowledge of the faith, right? Being able to maybe defend the faith, being trained in apologetics. This could be reading, studying, going on, you know, taking classes, whatever it might be. But this is forming the intellectual side of the faith. And then the tip of the iceberg is apostolic. And this is actually the skills you'd learn to go out and evangelize, right? How to share the gospel with somebody, how to share your testimony, how to invite somebody to into the church, you know, whatever that might be. But we called it, you know, I use the phrase the tip of the iceberg because so often that's what you see, right? But underlying that has to be strong human, spiritual, and intellectual formation, or, you know, I think you're just gonna peter out and not be fruitful.
Yeah, we always just use that phrase, you can't give what you don't have. It used to float around quite a bit, yeah, in my Focus community, at least. And that's definitely the crux here is, yeah, you have to have the basis of virtue. We talked about that a little bit when we were talking about the secular workforce environment. You just got to, you know, show those basic, yeah, virtue elements as a Christian, yeah, as a foundation. And the spiritual is a huge one, yeah, that one has to have. You have to have a relationship with the Lord to be able to have him work through you in, yeah, an apostolic way. So,
yeah, and what our dear listener wrote in particular was human formation versus spiritual formation. So again, this is all we have to go off of. We should probably request more specific.
Maybe so, yeah.
Because we have rather broad topics here. But right. There seems to be a tension there, right? Like between human formation and spiritual formation. And I know I would feel this. It's like, okay, if I'm struggling in my spiritual life, is it sometimes actually a struggle with human formation? You know, for example, right? If you're not sleeping and you show up and you're falling asleep in prayer, well, you may think prayer's not going well or prayer's boring and that's a spiritual problem. When it might be, I mean, in a sense it is, but it might be more on the level of human formation, right? Where you're not taking care of yourself, you're not getting the sleep that you need to. And that's something I think I found in Focus as well, and find in life in general. Is there is a tension there of you know, I think sometimes we spiritualize maybe things that are more problems in human formation.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, again, that plays totally into the idea that human formation is on the base of the pyramid. You have to have the foundation in order for the spiritual life to flourish. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think so. Would you, I don't know, what do you think about your own experience in terms of like when you have a spiritual issue? Are there ever times where you have trouble navigating between, okay, is this a spiritual problem or is there something I can just change in my routine that'll fix this? Do you run into those kinds of things?
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say definitely in my prayer life is a huge thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be as simple as, you know, at times like, man, I'm really struggling in prayer. So an example that I'm going through actually right now is mm-hmm. I tend to spend prayer time after soccer practice. That's mm-hmm. something I, you know, I'm a coach. I'm going to go out to soccer mm-hmm. practice every evening. I tend to pray afterward, but my mind is running with all kinds yeah. of soccer questions of, you know, should this person start in this position? What can I do at practice tomorrow to make it better? You know, why didn't practice go well today? All kinds of things just running in my mind yeah. right after practice, you know, so which makes prayer hard.
Yeah.
That in my mind is not a spiritual issue. That is just, yeah. I need to move my prayer time, so that I can be less distracted because of soccer. That would be an example, I think, of how yeah. a human element is keeping me from, you know, being as fruitful in the spiritual life.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I've been there as well. I know I'm like that after baseball, and you know, if I save my prayer for then, yeah, it's going to be the same thing, right? Not that you can't incorporate that into your prayer,
sure.
But it's going to be more of a fixation on, you know, what happened in the game then, right. Then I think a fruitful dialogue with the Lord. Yeah, I think I experienced this, or I've been experiencing something similar recently. One thing I know with like anxiety too, this can be a complicating factor here. Like I remember especially, you know, I don't know if you remember this from times where you struggle with scrupulosity, but if you're really scrupulous, sometimes you can go to pray and all you can think about is, you know, you're fixated on, you know, the one sin you're really obsessing on at that point, right? And you can show up to pray and you could be there for 30 minutes praying, for an hour praying, but you haven't really done much other than just fixate on whether or not you sinned or whether a sin was mortal or venial,
yeah.
right? And I've been there and I've seen other people there. And and that's my experience. I've found that mental prayer actually can be very difficult for a scrupulous person. And, you know, I haven't been struggling with scrupulosity per se, but similar kind of anxious tendencies. And I found that happening for me in prayer lately is, you know, I show up to pray and I have a desire to, you know, spend time peacefully with the Lord. And I end up, you know, just kind of getting anxious about something in particular and staying there.
Yeah.
And I think that can be something that, you know, if I'm not taking care of myself and doing the things that I need to, on that mental health level, I think that, you know, it can manifest itself as a spiritual problem. I might think, oh, I'm just in all this desolation, you know, and I just,
right.
just am not hearing the voice of the Lord. When that may be true, but, you know, the solution might actually be on the human level.
Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it, with mental health and the spiritual mm-hmm. life? That's very tricky. Can't hope to provide an adequate explanation here.
Right.
I can't.
Well, and that's where I think spiritual direction and counseling,
I mean,
I think there's such a growing network of Catholic counselors. I think there really is a big movement in the church right now for people who know the spiritual life and are trained in mental health. And so I think things like that can be good resources.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think this is a great topic that maybe deserves a whole podcast at some point, the different types of formation and how they're integrated, because I think they're very integrated, especially human and spiritual.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and I think it can go the other way too, right? With, you know, maybe we think something's a human problem, maybe it actually is a spiritual, on the level of spiritual formation.
So, right.
Difficult to discern, but I think, you know, knowing that we're body, soul, right, they're often very interconnected, I think is the important thing to note there.
Yeah. Yeah, the big summary I would say from my perspective is just knowing that human formation is really important for a fruitful spiritual life, seems to feed into a fruitful spiritual life. So
yeah. All right, good stuff. The next one we have from our new listener, we'll say dearest listener. I actually know who this one is, actually. This is personality tests and their role in the spiritual life.
Oh, my.
This so, could also be a whole topic, couldn't it?
So personality tests, I have had a little bit of like a stigma towards in my life. I just like really don't like the idea of someone like being told four letters, and then that's the label idea just kind of bothers me. And that I've become more open to the idea of personality tests and how they're helpful lately. But anyway, you probably have more well-informed thoughts than me on this. So why don't you give your go first?
Well, maybe I'll just start with, I think we had an amazing conversation with some of our friends probably about a month ago.
Yeah, we
Sunday
did.
Sunday night. Yeah. We, one of our friends, Ashley, shout out to Ashley. I know you listen. Watch this be the one she doesn't listen to. No, I'm sure she's listening. But she was excited about the love languages, or a number of people were, and she ended up hosting us on a Sunday night, and we got together and we all just had a conversation about the five love languages and what our love languages were. And it was a beautiful conversation, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
And I found that fruitful, right? Coming to not only learn to know ourselves, but then to, I think, get to know our friends deeper and to get to know how to love our friends deeper. I think the love languages is one, I guess it's sort of a personality test, but it's one in particular that I think it's easy to use to help you to grow.
Sure. I think that's a really, I would say the love languages is maybe my favorite that we've listed here, just because it's very, it helps me very clearly to understand how to serve the other person. The others, I'm like, well, what do I do with this? But that one is very clear.
See, that's why I feel I share that sentiment, right? And I feel like, you know, the other ones you've got listed here are Enneagrams, Myers-Briggs, and temperaments. Yeah. Enneagrams, I think, I don't know, you'd probably, you familiar with Enneagram?
Yes, but you'll have to remind me of what they are.
It's basically a horoscope.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Oh.
It's not, but it seems you have a number 1 through 9. And that's right. I'm sorry if you're an Enneagram fan. This will be a caricature. I'm sure there's good things about the Enneagram. But I struggle with it because it seems to me at times to be, one, it kind of has the tendency to put you in a box, right? You're a 3 or a 3-wing 6, or it's, I don't know if that's how it works or not, but and it also just, I don't know, it doesn't seem very helpful. At least I haven't had it explained in a way that's helpful and can help me grow in virtue. Myers-Briggs, I think there can be some of that, but at the same time, I think often the way that they're used is, oh, are you an INTJ? I'm an INTJ, right? And it's like, you are this way.
Yeah.
I'm in this box. This is why I act the way I do, without an effort to really grow. And I'm sure there are people who use these and it becomes an opportunity for growth. But I think I see in it, there is that temptation to end up putting yourself and others in a box with it.
Agree.
So I agree with that.
Yeah, we think really similarly there, I think.
But I do think the temperaments is another. I do want to mention the temperaments because I think they are another that can be helpful. There's a book called The Temperament God Gave You. It's written by, I think, a couple Catholic psychologists. And they do a really good job of explaining this, how knowing your temperament, and there's 4 basic temperaments, and this is why I think it's helpful too. It's fairly simple. So it's sanguine, melancholic, choleric, and phlegmatic. Sanguine and melancholic are opposites. Choleric and phlegmatic are opposites. Not to go into too much detail, but your sanguines, I've heard it described in like Winnie the Pooh characters before. Sanguine is like Tigger. Eeyore is your melancholic. Choleric is Rabbit, I think, and I think Pooh is phlegmatic. But your sanguine is like your energetic, outgoing, bubbly, like not super like structured or disciplined, but you know, energetic, fairly extroverted temperament. Your melancholic is like the opposite. They're more kind of introverted, more like internal with a lot of their thought process. And your choleric is like your super high strung go getter, extroverted, you know, they're like a natural leader. And then your phlegmatic's the opposite of the choleric. The phlegmatic's kind of more, they tend to be pretty indifferent or indecisive, but they're also not, not very confrontational. Like they very get along with people very well. And these are all opposites, right? So if you're choleric, you're like, that's like the very assertive, you know, they get punched. This is another description. How do you react to a punch, right? The choleric punches back. The phlegmatic just like is non-responsive, kind of backs down, right?
Gotcha.
Well, there's a time where you need to stand up for yourself and a time where you need to turn the other cheek, right? Or stand up for others maybe, or mm-hmm. a time where you need to turn the other cheek. And I've heard it said that Jesus would be, you know, right in the middle, right? He would be the perfect balance of all temperaments. So I explain all that, and that's the SparkNotes version, but to say that if you know your temperament, you know some basic virtues and vices that you have, and you can use those to grow, right? So if I'm choleric, I know that my tendency, I'm not choleric, but if I were choleric, I would know that my tendency is maybe to be a little too assertive, a little too aggressive, and I can work on that. I can cultivate, I can, you know, you talk about the Aristotelian mean, right? I can work on being more phlegmatic to kind of balance out that.
That's good. That makes a lot of sense. I have not done really any research on the temperaments, so I have really nothing to add, but that does make sense. It's helpful when it's clear, when clear things are said about how one should improve, how one should act based on what is being said. You know, so like with the temperaments, like you said, if, you know, someone's choleric, I've now got an idea of how I can move forward based on what's been given, you know, which I appreciate. And same thing with the love languages too.
So I think we're fans of temperaments and love languages and not as much the other.
Yeah. I don't know. To be fair, I haven't done a ton of, you know, digging into all of those. So
you're just prejudiced against them without knowing anything about them.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. That's me.
All right. Well, you asked, we commented.
Yep.
All right, we got just two left, I think.
Looks like two left.
All right, so one of them is more art! Exclamation point. Music.
I think we're always
down. Exclamation point.
I think we're always down to talk about this topic.
So I think how we want to address this is just what art and music have you been consuming recently?
Yeah, quite a bit. Let's see. I think the biggest thing that I have. That I wanted to mention is I'm still stuck on the Caravaggio train. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get off. I don't. No matter how many stops there are, yeah. I don't think I will. I'll just stay on it. But Saint Jerome, Caravaggio's painting of Saint Jerome. I think it's just called Saint Jerome. I'm not sure if it has a longer name, but
it's this guy, right?
It's not. That's actually Saint Matthew. There, he's showing me a picture of Saint Matthew. Writing the Gospels.
Oh, okay. It's similar to this, though.
It is kind of similar, yes.
Okay.
So it's St. Jerome sitting at his desk. He's an old man. He's leaning over his Bible that he's translating. You know, St. Jerome is known for translating the Bible into Latin. And I love the image. I love it because it just shows the determination and motivation and purpose of this man who's just withered and old, and he's digging into the scriptures. Mm. He's translating this massive Bible. He knows what his purpose is, and he's driven to do it no matter how old he is, no matter how tired he is. You can see it on his face, too. He's kind of got his head in it. He's got his head in his hand, and he's like, you can tell he's like really concentrating and brooding over it. It's beautiful, beautiful. And I actually keep it on my work desktop.
I was going to say, do you have an image of this?
Yeah, I keep it on my work.
Is it like an icon?
I pasted it from the internet. I keep it on my work desktop.
Okay.
It's just a reminder of, you know, because I've had some tough struggles at work, you know, just being being unmotivated and, you know. Like
a lot of numbers to
Yeah, a lot of numbers to crunch, add. As they say, yeah. we're not translating Latin at work, but It's really a motivation for me to really dig in and to be about what I'm about, you know.
Be about what you're
yeah,
about.
Yeah, to the end. Yeah. Be about what you're about. That should be a Yogi Berra quote, I feel like.
Yeah, but, I like that. Anyway. That's great. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so it's a beautiful image. It's given me a lot of consolation.
Yeah, man, Caravaggio, what a boss.
Yeah, it's incredible.
What an absolute boss.
It's dizzying. You know, sometimes when, and it's a gift from God, honestly. He worked hard, I'm sure, with that gift, but it's a gift from God to be able to paint that way. It's just dizzying sometimes as a human being. It's like, man, what am I doing with my life? You know, this man was just like incredibly gifted and
well, you're not killing people, didn't he? Wasn't he like a murderer?
Yeah, he's definitely had some vices, I have to say. He definitely needs some work on that human formation pillar. So, but
you've got that over
here. Yeah, but but still, you know what I mean? When you see like a great work like that,
yeah.
It's like,
man. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a gift from the Lord. Ah, love Caravaggio. I know I have his, I was gifted the Saint Thomas, the Incredulity of Saint Thomas. And that's I have it in my classroom and stare at it frequently. It's just such a vivid, just love when he, you know, sticks his finger in the side of the Lord and it's just so so blown up and so literal finger in the side of the Lord. It's just an incredible image. So mm-hmm. Love him. All right. So mine's not, my art is a music thing, a music album? Thing, music thing. what did I say earlier? An album I've been spinning.
That's right. Yeah.
The record I've been spinning of late, man, oh my gosh. And this is inspired by our friends at Word on Fire. What's the guy's name?
Andrew Petiprin.
Andrew Petiprin wrote an article about the album called The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill by Miss Lauryn Hill. And Lauryn Hill is a late 90s hip hop artist. And she was a member of the band The Fugees with Wyclef Jean, who was another hip-hop artist, and she's tied to the Marleys, like Bob Marley. She had 5 or 6 children with Rohan Marley.
Oh, I didn't know
Bob
that.
Bob Marley's son, yeah. Spent a lot of time in Jamaica, produced this album in 1998, I think. And I think Andrew Petiprin wrote an article when it went platinum in 2021 about this album. And oh my gosh, he wrote about how biblical this album is. And so I've been listening to this album and it has rocked my world. Because here's an album that's right, you know, in the midst of this emerging hip hop culture of the 90s, and smack dab in the middle of it is this gospel infused album from Lauryn Hill. And it, to me, it's one of those where you aren't expecting to see something that infused with the gospel. And it's done in a beautiful way. It's not, you know, it's not in your face. It's not even like Kanye, you know, Kanye West's, you know, conversion, and all of a sudden he's got all these songs about God. It's just done in such a subtle and beautiful and well-integrated way. You've listened to some of it, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've listened to the album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, yeah. You know, I think it's considered, it might even be the most popular rap album of all time, or it's considered to be like the greatest rap album of all time. It's a... I was sharing it with a friend who's into rap, and I remember he was listening to one of the songs and going, oh, that's the song such and such by Drake. So it like has influence in the rap community too, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yeah. So you're saying like he referenced it.
He took the sound from Lauryn Hill. Yeah, okay. Or whatever. Yeah. So I'm getting out of my lane here, but
somehow influenced Drake.
No. Well, my point of that is that's an example of how it, you know, it has influence in the rap community significantly. A really incredible album.
Yeah, I'll maybe just share one line from it, and this is from the song "To Zion," which is actually about her son that she had out of wedlock, I believe. And you know, as her career was emerging, her rap career was emerging, and a lot of people actually encouraged her to have an abortion, but she chose life. And so this song "To Zion" is about that struggle. She actually said she said regarding this choice that she had that it, you know, a lot of people said this is going to affect your career, you shouldn't have the child, but she was actually in a period of writer's block, and her pregnancy with her son like broke her out of that, just gave her a lot of inspiration for writing. And I think this is part of it. This quote I'm going to read is going to speak to that. She says, "And I thank you for choosing me to come through unto life to be a beautiful reflection of his grace. See, I know that a gift so great is only one God could create. And I'm reminded every time I see your face." This is just a grace-infused lyric, right in the middle of pop culture, right? It makes me think a lot about More Than Entertained than what you guys do
with
that project there. But I think this is just such a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no hiding this either. This is clear, a clear message.
Yeah. Yeah. Think it's intentional, huh?
Indeed.
All right, good stuff. I don't know. We're about 50 minutes in. Do we have time for the last one?
Sure, let's touch on it. Why not?
All right. This is for you, Emily.
This is a topic we got from Emily, I guess. Yeah.
You guess.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. All right. What is this one?
This one is going on pilgrimage or traveling. I think we were wanting to juxtapose this against our podcast last time on local community. I don't know how I want to play this, but yeah. I think Dylan and I definitely value pilgrimages and going on them. I know I've been on several. I don't know if you have you been on a pilgrimage.
So I actually believe that in order to live local community, you should never travel.
Really? Just never go anywhere.
Yeah, that was my firm belief.
What about like to the town over? Do you think you should go there? Or?
Nope. Focus on your neighbors.
Yeah, seriously. Stay in your. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally kidding. If our listeners can't tell.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. So how do we want to play this? Let's see. So
no. Yeah. So I think that there can be a tension here, right? If you're trying to live locally, I think especially, you know, as easy as it is to travel for a lot of people, I think there can be a temptation to spend so much time traveling, visiting places, going on pilgrimages even, right, that are spiritually oriented and lose sight of home. I think we talked about some of those things on the last episode, right? But that being said, surely it can't be the case that you should never travel. You should never go on pilgrimage because, you know, you just need to devote yourself to local community. So I don't know. Maybe it's just it's a matter of knowing your responsibilities, taking the time, taking the time you need at home to be with your community. I think you talked a little bit about that balance for yourself, right?
Yeah. You
know, having times where you feel like you're spending too much time away from your community. So I think it's probably something to prayerfully discern and it's going to look differently from person to person.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's important to think about living locally and going on pilgrimage and all that. Really living locally is an attitude of the heart. It's about where your focus and where your heart lies. What's your, I've said it already. When you're going on pilgrimage or if you're doing it frequently, I think it's important to ask oneself, is that what's driving me? Is that what I'm always looking forward to? Is that where, where my purpose is? If it's on always traveling and going on the next vacation and going on the next pilgrim, whatever it is, then that seems to me like one is not living locally. Living locally is having your life's center on Christ and then in your local community.
That's true.
That's
a good point.
Fair way to say.
Yeah, right. Like if you're constantly itching to go somewhere, right? To leave, then there might be a problem.
And I've certainly been that way before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that being said, I also think, it's about vocation, right? And people have different vocations here. And I think I recently was listening to Steve Ray. Are you familiar with him?
I've heard his name.
He's a Catholic theologian who, I think he's been to the Holy Land like 180 times, I want to say is the number I heard. And I was just doing the math on that. Like, he's traveling many times a year to the Holy Land, right?
Wow, yeah.
To do that. And, like my precise math there. Yeah. I did the math on that. He's traveling many times.
180 divided by 60 is many.
Right, well, at least three times a year. He's done it since he was 1 year old, right?
Yeah.
But, so, I don't know when he started. But that's a lot of travel, right? But that clearly has to be something as part of his vocation and sure. his calling from the Lord. And, you know, I think he can live locally within that calling, right? Even another, you know, Catholic speaker that travels, right? I remember Christopher West talking about this. He has like strict, I forget if it's Christopher West or Matt Frad. They probably both do. But they're talking about how they have strict, really strict boundaries. Like they only travel X amount, you know, they're only gone X number of days a month, et cetera, because
that's good.
Their priorities, you know, to their local community at home and primarily their family.
That's really good. Yeah. Yeah. The real crux of it is just being where you are, you know, being where you are and being where you're supposed mm-hmm. to be.
I think maybe the word that comes to my ear is like pilgrimages and traveling. These are occasional things.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And I think if we're keeping them as occasionally, we can continue to look forward to them, but live in the present and be where we are rather than make them kind of an idol in Agreed. Our life.
Agreed. Yeah.
We didn't talk about any specific pilgrimages, but maybe that's another.
Maybe for another time. That'd be a good conversation time. Too. Another time.
Would be cool. A lot of stories.
Got some good extra topics, I think, for next podcast.
All right. Great. All right. Well, thank you, Emily, for that topic.
Thank you.
And thank you to all our listeners for listening, first and foremost, and for giving us feedback, secondly. Those of you who tell us stuff in person, those of you we don't know who submitted stuff. And yeah, we're grateful. We're just grateful for you listening, grateful for you giving us feedback. Let us know if there's more you want us to talk about. I'd like to do another one of these. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe be a little more specific in your questions and in your topics that you want us to suggest, just so we have a little more to go off, just so that we can make sure we're talking about exactly what it is that you want.
And are we going to read The Death of Ivan Ilyich before the next podcast, or are we not? Maybe we shouldn't commit to that.
Well, let's not give us a timeline, but we'll work on it. We'll get the novella and fair enough. We'll give it a go for dear listener whom we don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, colloquiumshow@gmail.com, best way to reach us. Fill out our survey as well in the show notes. And we'll see you next time on Colloquium. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.